You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Friday, everyone. Arkansas basketball has a big game tomorrow against Auburn. We'll have Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser on the show today to talk about that matchup. But first, a word from Rudy's Barbecue.
I'm William Clark Green. Been chasing songs all over this great country for years now. It's been a blast, but the road will wear you out. Good food makes it better. Rudy's is the go-to for me and the crew. No frills, just real Texas barbecue done right. Brisket, ribs, cream corn, that famous sauce. It's like a little piece of home when you're nowhere near it. Don't get me started on those breakfast tacos. Serve till 10 a.m., which is perfect if you're living on musician time. Find a Rudy's at Rudy's.com. Who knows? You might just bump into me in line.
Welcome back in. Happy to be joined by Adam Cole of the Montgomery Advertiser. Adam, we've got another Arkansas-Auburn basketball game this weekend. You know, looking at this game, you know, when I think about the first matchup, it kind of seems to me like that was maybe Arkansas, what they look at as their low point right now. Like, that was the worst Arkansas has played. At least from Auburn's end, I would think it'd be hard to, like, I know they beat Florida. That had to be a pretty high point. But I would have to think that the win against Arkansas was about as good as they've looked too. I guess, what do you remember from that first game? And I should have said off the bat, you know, happy to have you.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for having me. But yeah, I think, like, I was going back through and reading up on just like the first game yesterday. And I think my headline for the follow after that game was how Auburn got its like best 40 minutes yet against Arkansas. And obviously that Florida win, like, that's probably one of the best wins in the country and certainly Auburn's best win this year. But it felt like against Arkansas, that was their most complete game. Cause, you know, I mean, the only difference, you know, between that and the Florida game was Florida kind of came back in it and Arkansas never really did. But yeah, I think you're dealing with it. It's going to be really interesting this time around. I don't know that it's going to just shake out some completely inverse result, but like you said, like, I think that was kind of, you know, it was certainly one of Auburn's high points. And from everything I've just read and gathered and going back and listening to what Calipari said too, like, one of the first things he said was, he was like, I walked in the locker room and said, I'm burning the film. Like, we're not watching this. He's like, this isn't us. And so it's interesting how, at least for Auburn, like a month later, they're kind of in the same circumstance heading into this matchup, you know, dealing with another losing streak and they need, you know, a bounce back big time, but that's, it's going to be infinitely harder to do on the road.
Yeah, it's funny because the first time they played, it was Calipari. We joked about it yesterday, like his annual burn the tape game. Last year, they went down to South Carolina and got just pummeled, and it was his burn the tape game. We got that earlier this year with the Auburn game. But he kept on like coming back to it after that game of like, we ran into a desperate team and we weren't able to match, you know, the urgency that they had coming into this one. And I would have to think, you know, it can only be intensified you know, this go around because we're getting closer to March. And I know I've looked at bracket projections and, you know, I was honestly a little bit surprised to see Auburn is hanging on as like an 8 seed with a 14-10 record. It just, I think, goes to show probably the strength of some of their victories. But that being said, you know, they're in these tournament projections right now, and but they're on a losing streak and it's getting closer to March. So I'd have to think, you know, that urgency, you know, element could only be a little bit stronger this time.
Yeah, it's interesting because you know, I mean, you glimpse at the Twitter replies, I should say. You don't really take the time to go through and read them in depth. But, you know, that and just kind of the general vibe of things feel like Auburn's a bubble team right now. But then you go back and, like you said, you look at the resume. And I think the thing that's really saved them to this point is you don't really have a bad loss, at least in terms of the resume. You've got some major blowouts in there, but those were, you know, by way of Arizona on the road and that Michigan team in Vegas when they were red hot, and you know, Purdue in a semi-neutral site in Indianapolis. That's where your worst losses were, against really quality opponents. But that's kind of what's saving Auburn right now. And so it's turned into this last stretch of the schedule for them is just, it's kind of the same thing. It's, you know, nobody plays to not lose, right? At least that's what every coach says when they have a hot mic in front of them. But Auburn's in a place right now where I think it's three more or four more quad one opportunities, including this game. And those will be tough because it's you've got this, then you've got on the road at Alabama to end the year. You're hosting Kentucky, and then I think right now it's teetering on the edge, but I think technically they go to Oklahoma, and I think that's technically a quad one opportunity. And so it'd be great to steal a couple of those. Like Auburn could absolutely benefit from that. But the most important thing is, you know, I think a road trip to Mississippi State, hosting Ole Miss. You play LSU in there too. It's just you can't lose those games that you're not expected to lose for them. But the good news is, like you said, I mean, their resume holds up. It's funny. We were looking back, I think it was 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, Auburn was in about the same line of an 8-9 seed and made it into the tournament. Only had one quad one win. They were like 1-9. In quad one games, and they still managed to get that high of a seed. And right now I think Auburn's sitting at 4 quad one wins. So like the resume is, you know, you're right in the field, but the important thing is just making sure that you maintain the average down the stretch. So maybe it's not another quad one win, but at the very least, like you can't lose to these, you know, teams that are in the cellar of the SEC right now for sure.
Yeah, it's funny you brought up OU because that is definitely, I can attest, it's a quad one win for Arkansas right now because it was they're number 75 in the net, which is like the very last place that you can be. So Arkansas is like you know, low key, like OU beats Vanderbilt over the weekend. It's like, yes, hold on to that quad one, Sooners. But LSU's also a road win quad one for them, which it's just some of these games don't feel like them. But it's funny because the SEC, you end up having all these opportunities to get those. And certainly, you know, I would have to think that a game like Saturday's for Auburn, you know, we mentioned it, like the resume stacks up right now, but I would have to think like the earlier game against Arkansas, and especially that Florida game, kind of has to be what Auburn's like latching onto at this point, is those type of wins that you can have in your back pocket.
That Florida game is, not sure the best way to sum it up because it's not the only, you know, I mean, like you mentioned, that first Arkansas game, the NC State game. And I mean, even what they did against Texas, you know, coming back from down 14, I mean, there are a lot of confidence instilling wins right now. But what that Florida win did for this, not only like this team, but this program entering just kind of a new era. I know I'm really going inside baseball on the Auburn side of this. But like, you know, they had not beaten Florida on the road in 30 years. And I think Bruce Pearl was 0-6 in that building. And to go in there and do what they did, I think surprised a lot of people. And you know, they may not say it surprised themselves, but I'm sure there was a degree of that, you know, that you were able to go down there and handle that. So, you know, these quad one games this weekend in particular, I mean, if you can go in there and sweep Arkansas, like, obviously you can't lose to the Mississippi States and the LSUs and the Ole Misses, but like, I think that does a lot to just like solidify, that would do a lot to solidify Auburn's place in the field. If they could say, look, we swept this Arkansas team this year. They really need one of those quad one opportunities to avoid any of the just anxiety and wondering of, okay, like where do we sit in all of this? If we sit in it at all.
Yeah. You talked about, you know, just kind of the new era of Auburn basketball. I'm just curious if we can even backtrack a little bit to, you know, where the baton was passed from Bruce to Stephen Pearl. Like, was that a well-kept secret? Did it shock everybody? Like, how was that on your end, you know, having been there?
That's a good question, because when it happened, I think it was a surprise for everybody, just the sheer timing of it. You know, I mean, it was the first day of practices. I think at that point we were all like, you know, there had been a question of, okay, is Bruce Pearl coming back this year? But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't what dominated the headlines of that program coming out of, you know, the Final Four last year. And with how much time passed, it just kind of seemed like, okay, this is lingering in the air, but it's been so long and then it happened. You know, so it was certainly a surprise that it happened when it did. I think the one place where it's a little different depending on who you're talking to about it. You know, I saw a lot of people pose beg the question of, you know, obviously Stephen Pearl is Bruce Pearl's son, and the question of nepotism. And I think it's a very fair question to raise, but I know around here, like locally, there had always kind of been a, you know, almost unspoken understanding that even if Stephen Pearl was not the guy to succeed Bruce Pearl whenever he stepped down, that he was going to get a very serious look. And, you know, let's face it, I mean, the timing of it all just renders a lot of that moot. There was really nothing else they could do. You know, who are you going to hire who isn't already in your building at that point? But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't shocking to see Steven get elevated into that role, even if the timeline made that really your only option. But I also, like, I don't know. I think a lot of fans are frustrated right now. I mean, especially just considering they're in the middle of a 3-game losing streak. It's their longest losing streak this year. And, you know, I've been a little surprised by that, though, the amount of frustration that I've seen, especially with just this roster. You know, there's a lot of really interesting pieces on this roster, whether that is Keyshawn Hall or Tahad Pettiford, but also, I mean, you know, guys like Kevin Overton, to me, they didn't really jump off the page when Auburn went and got him this offseason, but still, like, you know, was interesting to think about how they'd factor into the equation. And then, like, developmental pieces too, you know, Filip Jovich, Sebastian Williams Adams, Elijah Freeman. I think you've got pieces on this team that you can build around moving forward, but it's still just kind of feels like an incomplete roster. Even if they have a lot of those really interesting and dynamic pieces, you know, they don't have the front court, especially in terms of defensive presence that they've had in recent years. And I think that's been a major, major difference down the stretch of these games. And, you know, for people who are frustrated, you know, with the head coach, you know, with Steven Pearl, like, I wonder how much they think about what Bruce Pearl would have done with this roster, because I don't know how much better it really would have been. So it's been an interesting year to cover on the whole. It was certainly surprising when Bruce Pearl stepped down, but it was a little less surprising to see Steven, like, step up into that role. And even though it hasn't been the sort of follow-up you wanted to all the success of last year, like, I think this year was always going to be kind of a little more of a developmental year, especially once that roster got finalized. But I'll be really interested to see, like, what happens after the year of roster construction for next year, because they need size. You know, they need a formidable front court again with just the system that they've settled into and run as well as they did in recent years. They've got to get back to that, because it's something they are sorely lacking on this roster.
Yeah, I'd have to think that after beating, you know, it was part of a 4-game winning streak, that Florida win, the vibes were pretty high, I would guess, around there, where you're 14-7. Seems like maybe you're piecing some things together. You're 5-3 and the conference, and then you have this 3-game losing streak, albeit to teams that, you know, a lot of teams in the SEC would lose to. It's not like you went and, you know, lost to, like, South Carolina or an LSU or one of them. But during that losing streak, you know, what's gone wrong, I guess? Like, what was working during the winning streak that all of a sudden in this losing streak you're saying, oh boy, that's gone wrong?
I don't, like, it's... I think the book's out is kind of the way I would sum it up, because what we saw during that streak was, you know, kind of to get back to that sense of there were some really interesting pieces on this team. Pettiford and Hall in particular, they're shot creators. They can make their own offense, and they're really, really good at that. But also historically, and especially when you move into a new head coach who is bringing, you know, keeping the same staff entirely, you run this system that's really produced for your offense in years past. And that was the big question of, okay, how do these guys settle into a system and play alongside each other? And I think when it was at its best, you were leaning into a lot of those strengths. And if anything, like, you know, the biggest strength being, like, Keyshawn Hall is able to get downhill at will and get to the free throw line and just seemingly as many possessions as he wants to. And so they were doing a lot of that, but it was, you know, everybody was leaning into that. It was about getting close to the basket, whatever end that was on, you know, defending the interior, like, just ad nauseum and getting close to the basket and getting those quality shot attempts, as opposed to, you know, Pettiford's had a penchant for the 3-point line, as has Hall, as has Overton, but, like, they were just getting downhill and getting to the basket a lot more on both ends of the floor, and physicality and aggression. Those were really kind of the big things. And it's not that they haven't tried to do that throughout the losing streak. I just think teams have enough tape now that they've learned to scout it. And it really seemed to rear its head against Vanderbilt. You know, Keyshawn Hall didn't make a shot from 2-point range, which is just shocking. Like, you know, he's, I think, fifth in the country in scoring. He's one of maybe 5 or 6 guys averaging 20 points. And he wasn't able to do what he's been so effective at in terms of getting to the rim. And I think teams have just kind of figured that out. And now Auburn's in a place where I don't know that you have to go back to square, but you've got to tinker and you've got to reinvent and you got to do something a little different at this point on both ends of the floor. So that's really been kind of the gist to me of the 3-game losing streak. I think there's enough tape out on this team now that Opponents know how to scout it, know how to try to figure it out. And it's, you know, they've hit another stretch of Mark Byington had a great quote after the Vanderbilt game about like how Vanderbilt has had to reinvent itself like multiple times over throughout this season when, you know, they've hit a loss or some adversity. And I think Auburn's right in the thick of something like that. There's got to be a bit of reinvention, however that looks, to get back to winning, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass, serving its community since 1971. Bentonville Glass is committed, professional, and versatile. Looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas? Looking for skilled craftsmanship? Choose Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them today at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Adam, you mentioned him, and I want to bring him back up. Keyshawn Hall. I mean, he was so good in the first game between Arkansas and Auburn. And I know that there was like some background there that I think Arkansas, you know, had a chance at them maybe in the transfer portal, and they maybe opted to go a different direction. And I think I remember him saying something along the lines of like, it was a personal game for him. It seems to me when Auburn's at its best this year, he is right in the middle of just being a difference maker. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah. It certainly is. I mean, when you've got a guy who's averaging, like I said, 20 points a game, like that is just a big difference. And, you know, I mean, it was significant against Vanderbilt, the latest loss in this streak, because he got a technical foul just before like the halfway point of the second half, and went to the bench after that and didn't come back. And, you know, a lot of people were like, you know, did Keyshawn Hall get benched because of this technical? But you go look at it, and like he stayed in the game for a couple more minutes after that. I think he hit a three, got a rebound and assist both. And it wasn't so much about like this technical foul or whatever he may or may not have said. It was the fact that like Auburn wasn't doing anything defensively. And then they took him out of the game and brought in Elijah Freeman, and Vanderbilt had a 14-point lead and they cut it all the way down to four. And so Stephen Pearl's talked about it. It had a lot more to do with what he was or really wasn't doing on the defensive end when they were on the floor, and kind of, again, you know, this guy who's able to be great individually from an offensive standpoint. Stephen Pearl was also like, our offense wasn't getting into a flow either with him on the floor. And so they are so much better when he's at his best, but also when they're at their very best, he's doing more than just scoring. You know, really early on in the year, there were a few games where they were getting handled on the boards. I think it was some of those Michigan-Arizona games where that kind of stuff just inevitably happens. But Stephen Pearl used it as a talking point of like, we've got to get to the glass more. And, you know, Keyshawn Hall had a run there where he was, you know, I think averaging near a double-double for like a few games at the very least, because he was just attacking the glass as much as he was trying to score at the glass too. And so when they're at their best, he's a lot of times a very big focal point in that. But when they're at their absolute best, he's doing a lot more than just scoring. And that's something that like he's got to get back to this weekend in Fayetteville. And you go look at the box scores. We were talking about this the other day. He's not somebody who like, I think he's only had one multi-game stretch this year where like he scored less points in the next game after like not reaching his season average. He's not a guy who really stays down, at least offensively. But I'll be interested to see just like what his role is this weekend, because I don't know that you're going to suddenly play your leading scorer significantly less minutes. But like, I think you're going to need to see something different out of him, whatever that looks like. And so I'll be glued to that to see what exactly, you know, that is.
One of the storylines on the Arkansas end, at least going into this, is that Arkansas has been without DJ Wagner and Carter Knox for a pair of games in a row now, and Malik Ewan got popped in the face down at LSU and had to get stitches on, I think that was Tuesday night, the Knights run together. So Arkansas is down to, say, all three of those players don't play, or maybe you get one of them back. It's probably a 6 or 7 man rotation for Saturday's game. So what does the depth look like for Auburn? How deep do they go? What is the rotations like?
That actually got brought up today because, you know, depending on how it all shakes out, I mean, this could be one of the few times this year where Auburn is running a deeper rotation than its opponent. I mean, you know, last season, that team, which was just, you know, very deep, very experienced, very capable, they ran as deep as, you know, 10 to 12 guys in a game. But this year, I mean, it's really gone like 8 at its deepest. Things haven't really worked out with Caden Magwood. He was, I think, a top 100 recruit, certainly a blue chip from Overtime Elite. And He hasn't really found his way into the rotation. They've been playing Blake Mychalek, who's a walk-on guard kind of at like the reserve point guard spot. But over the last couple games, they've kind of made some switches there as far as their rotation goes. Kevin Overton has moved over to playing some point. And they've moved Simon Walker, who was another blue chip freshman and was dealing with a preseason injury. They've kind of moved him back into the rotation for a few minutes. But, you know, they run about seven or eight deep. They don't run a lot of bodies, but this game, depending on what's up with Ewan and Wagner and Knox, I mean, like, this could be one of the first times that Auburn's actually running deeper than its opponent. I don't know how much that's going to change for Auburn in terms of what it does on the court, you know. Against Vanderbilt, they started pressing a little more, especially in the second half when they were cutting that lead. But Stephen Pearl's talked about it too. Like they're not deep enough that he feels like they can run a press consistently without just wearing themselves out. And so I think that's going to be an interesting storyline to watch because, you know, it seems like certainly both these teams are going to be a little, you know, shorthanded, no doubt.
I want to ask about Auburn on the road this year. I know they have the Florida win on the road. And we know how good they are inside Neville Arena. I mean, Arkansas ran into that. But how have they been on the road though? Because you know Bud Walton's gonna, you know, it's one of the better venues in the SEC. And you've played Auburn's played some really tough road games. It looks like it's not like you've been handed like the hey go to Starkville. Well, actually they do go to Starkville, but haven't to this point. Like go to Starkville at 11 a.m. on a Saturday, like Arkansas's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they've been, you know, I don't know what the average line is for like, you know, a solid effort on the road, but away from Neville on the whole neutral and away, I think they're 5-7 and in true road games are 2-4. So it hasn't been great this year, but yeah, like you said, I mean, they've been, I'm trying to think true road games have been, they won at Ole Miss, they won at Florida, you lose that overtime game at Georgia, but you know, it hasn't been, like you said, I mean, it's been a lot of, you know, top two quad opportunities on the road. And I mean, that's been an interesting thing about this team. It's funny. People keep drawing parallels to like the football season of how things feel snake bit, the officiating, because I'll just say Texas A&M and leave it at that. But like one thing too, that like, if you want to make that comp to Hugh Freeze's last football team here is like, with the exception of playing the powerhouses in the country right now, the Michigans, the Arizonas, like pretty much every other loss, including, you know, like the Houston game really early in the year when Houston was ranked number one nationally, have been close. So Auburn's been a team that's been capable of like fighting and just kind of staying in the game until the final few possessions. I think a lot of that has to do with what they get on offense. I think Tahad Pettiford and Keyshawn Hall both kind of have that inherent clutch gene. And I think that really helps them a lot in those regards. So like the results, I don't know that they've been what you would desire, you know, because obviously, you know, if you're in that building, you don't want to lose anywhere, but they've done a pretty impressive job, all things considered, of like staying in it on the road. And you know, the last thing that they need is kind of a, I think, a blowout result on the road in SEC play. If they were to lose this one and go to four straight losses and that's the fashion it comes in, like, I think things could be liable to really go off the rails.
Adam, it's funny that you brought up, you know, making a football parallel because, you know, that's just, I feel like every SEC program, like it's like all the sports are everything. Like everybody that watches football, watches basketball, watches baseball, all that. But I'm just now curious now that you brought it up, like what is the vibe around Auburn athletics right now? Because, you know, it's funny, you know, in the same boat as Arkansas, where you have a new football coach, where I'm sure that that's, you know, you're in the honeymoon phase if you're like Arkansas. But like, I don't know, where's the excitement coming from right now? Like, is that it?
I think there's, you know, there's a lot of optimism about football right now. And I think, like you said, I mean, there's always that honeymoon phase. There was a honeymoon phase with Hugh Freeze, and that only gets heightened when you're in. I know everybody calls it talking season. I call it strength coach season. You know, everybody has the best strength coach in the country right now, Ethan, and nobody's ever been more athletic and more developed. And so there's a lot of optimism around that right now. But somebody actually brought that up after the Vanderbilt game of like, you know, when was the last time things felt this down in Auburn? And it's funny too, because that's taking it really in a vacuum of the recent history, but I think it's, you know, football, baseball, there's a lot of expectation there this year. I mean, this will be my fifth season covering that baseball program. And this is the first time they've gone into the year, I think consensus top 25, but they're consensus top 10. So it's kind of a flux state right now. Like, I don't know that things are really as bleak or bad as they feel with this three game win streak in mind, but like, there's a lot of things are fresh right now. Things are fresh. Things are new. And, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. I mean, we'll see how this all feels when we look back at the end of the basketball season. But I think if you can make things go chalk at the end of this regular season, get into the tournament, get, you know, anywhere from a 9 to a 7 seed and, you know, just get there. Like, I think that's an acceptable year one, like for Stephen Pearl, I genuinely do. And really, like, you know, if people want to break out the pitchforks next year, I think they're more than welcome to. But I think in a weird way, like, I think you could look back on this and see it as like a really a needed year for him in terms of year one of just, you know, you're learning to deal with adversity and things just not really going your way, however much you try to scheme and develop it all up and get the best out of your players. But like, things do feel a little bleak right now, but I think a lot of that just has to do with the recent stretch, you know, for this men's basketball team. But you know, as we kind of get to the end of this athletic calendar, as we get through the start of the next one, I'm going to be really interested to see where things sit, you know, especially with how the men's basketball roster looked, how baseball does, how football starts off. Like, those are obviously the three kind of big linchpins. And beyond that right now, I'm trying to think, men's golf, you know, people love, like, that's been a really big thing. Jackson Coivin, if you don't know Jackson Coivin, that's a name to start knowing, because I started covering him when he was a true freshman and they won a national championship. I think that was 2 years ago. And it was like, you know, could this guy reach a point of Tiger Woods level success professionally? He's already got a PGA Tour card. And in their last event, I think that was last weekend, he bested a college record that was set by Tiger Woods when he was at Stanford. So that's where a lot of the excitement is right now, is men's golf. But no, it's kind of an interesting flux state right now. I know that was a lot of rambling and getting into the weeds, but no, a little bleak right now, but I imagine a little more time, things will even out.
No, I appreciate the ramble. It just was a thought that crossed my mind yesterday. I was like, Auburn's in kind of a weird state right now. Just I thought, like, it's a little bit of transition everywhere, I would have to assume.
Yeah.
And you know, for Auburn, I would have to think it's also a weird dynamic that Bruce Pearl, like, you know, you're transitioning from, you know, from father to son. And it's like, if Stephen Pearl was having this year one, whenever Bruce Pearl had his year one, I'm sure it would be like, oh, look at the basketball program. It's just Bruce Pearl set the bar so high, I would have to think.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of going back to that hire, you know, like, every coaching hire is a dice roll, right? It's a gamble inherently. And Auburn, I think, had one of two bets it could make with whoever they were going to hire. And it was anybody on the outside or Stephen Pearl. And you're either going with somebody who's bringing in a whole new culture and going away from everything that had made you successful for the last 11 years, or you're elevating the guy who had been the associate head coach for the last 2 or 3 years, had been, yes, like, on his father's staff, you know, the whole time, but you could also go with somebody who has seen it built up and knows the system and knows this place and would have the staff in place too, that has also seen all of that. And I think they took the safer gamble, but you're right. If Stephen Pearl's year one came at the same time, you know, if it was Stephen instead of Bruce that they hired way back when, and Stephen Pearl had an identical year one, like, I think everybody would be delighted with that, because Auburn basketball hadn't been to, you know, two Final Fours yet, or hadn't won, I forget the number of SEC championships between regular season and the tournament, but they hadn't had that success. And so, yeah, Bruce Pearl set a very, very high bar for a program and a fan base that, you know, isn't familiar with that kind of success. And so it's interesting to watch sometimes a football heavy fan base get into basketball, because, you know, they live and die by, like, every single result. And it's just like, you know, every other sport, you can't really live and die with it in the same way that you do football. And so that's been interesting to kind of watch the patience or lack thereof from this fan base. But you make a really good point. Like, the bar was set incredibly high. I don't know that it was going to be met this year. In any case, from what happened last year, whoever your head coach was. But no, I think this is a fan base that's really hungry to just, like, maintain that success. And I'll be interested to see where it goes from here and how quick Stephen Pearl can, you know, build on year one and make better what he did this year, you know, in the years to come.
No, it is. That was funny. It is funny when if there's like a football rich school that starts to hop on the basketball train, or you've got in Indiana's case, a basketball traditional powerhouse that's now all about football. It's just funny to see how the success of those sports can totally, you know, sway a fan base and its affections. Adam, we'll end on this. Arkansas, Auburn, keys to the game. You think Auburn wins if they do this, Auburn loses if they, you know, if they do this.
I think the two things, you know, and the two things that I would look at for Auburn, if they win, you know, if you want to classify it as defensive step up, you know, just taking a jump on that end from what we've seen over the last couple games in particular. I forget where Arkansas sits in terms of like offensive efficiency rating. I think it's near the top, yeah. You know,
they're
in
pretty
the country.
High.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, I mean, Alabama, I think was number two coming in here, and Vanderbilt was, I think, 12th. And so, you know, they've been playing really good offenses these last two games, but you know, after the Vanderbilt game, I mean, Steven Pearl talked about it and he said, it wasn't a lack of effort. You know, I think we just didn't execute in the way that we needed to. And that's on me, you know, to make sure that I'm getting it through to these guys and scouting them up to put them in the best position possible. And so you're going to need better, I guess, execution on the defensive end. And then I think something that really would just really set them over the top is what they do, obviously, on the other end of the floor. But you've seen Tahad Pettiford kind of take a jump over the last two games. He's had two consecutive 20-point games and has shot a lot better from the floor, which he'd been struggling to do early on, but he's starting to get downhill a lot more. And Tahad's a small kid, you know, but he's got this really impressive ability to drive, as does Keyshawn Hall. And if you can get those two guys going, I think it just would open up your offense so much. Kevin Overton too has been great from distance the last two games. I think he's shooting 50%. You know, and I think if you can weigh on those two anchors and get, you know, drive the lane, get to the line, I think it would open up a lot for your offense. And so those are kind of the two things I'm looking at. Like if they win, I think you're going to see a much more fluid, cohesive offense. And, you know, I think it would be that or the same sort of thing on the other end of the floor. You know, if they lose, I'd look at the glass as a really big thing. That's always been just sort of a linchpin in their success, is how well they're able to rebound. I forget what the margin was in this first matchup, but Auburn has really been shockingly gangbusters on the glass. And if they can't impact the game there, and they struggle in those other two regards that I talked about, like it's going to be really, really difficult, to pull out a win. So those are kind of the three things I'm looking at.
Adam, tell people where they can find your work.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. If you're going straight to the source, if you're looking for Auburn, not me, head to MontgomeryAdvertiser.com, click sports at the top, and there's a little drop down, click on Auburn, you'll have everything you need. And if you're looking for me, just it's TikTok, Twitter, wherever you're looking, at Cole Reporter. That's my last name, C-O-L-E, and the word reporter. So yeah.
Sweet. Well, really appreciate you hopping on, man.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, and we'll be back with another show on Monday. We'll have a lot to recap between the basketball game over the weekend, baseball's at the College Showdown. Until then, you can read all of our coverage over at wholehogsports.com. Hope you have a great weekend, everyone.